Good morning. My name is Carol Kraus. I'm the Communications Director at the National Institute on Drug Abuse. It's nice to see you all again, and thank you so much for coming this morning. The Monitoring the Future survey is well known to many of us. It measures drug use in several different ways: lifetime, past year, and past month, and in some cases, daily use. In 2011, 46,773 students in the 8th, 10th, and 12th grade were interviewed. We're happy to have some guests with us today who are going to be speaking, and then we'll open it up for questions. And I also want to add that we have this live streaming, and we have some reporters who are also watching this and will be able to ask some questions themselves. We're happy to have with us today Dr. Howard Koh, Assistant Secretary for Health in the Department of Health and Human Services. Honored guest today, thanks for coming. Director Gil Karolikowski, the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. And we have Dr. Lloyd Johnston, University of Michigan, to tell us about his 37th Monitoring the Future survey. Did I get that right this year? Thank you. We have some other guests that we would like to mention who are in the audience today. We have some guests from the Drug Enforcement Administration, Deb Augustine and Sigrid Mellis, thanks for coming. And Richard Lucy, Center for Substance Abuse and Prevention at SAMHSA. So we'd like to get started. I'd like to introduce NIDA Director, Dr. Nora Volkoff.
Good morning. I want to welcome you all to the 37 Monitoring the Future survey press conference. The Monitoring the Future was started in 1975 and has been led by Dr. Lloyd Johnston since then. And it's an extremely important survey for us in terms of public health, because it enables us, by surveying annually the prevalence rates of drug use in this country, to identify new emerging areas, as well as to evaluate whether the prevention interventions that we are targeting towards substance use are actually being effective. This year, as we look through the results that we're obtaining, several things emerge. On the one hand, that have good news, and on the other hand, that are not so good news. And I'm going to emphasize specifically those findings as it relates to the trends that have been occurring in our country, as opposed to just focusing on the differences between 2010 and 2011. But you'll be hearing from that from Dr. Johnston. What is remarkable in my perspective from what we are observing on Monitoring the Future is that there is a significant decrease in the use of cigarette smoking among teenagers, 8th, 10th, and 12th graders. That's actually quite important because cigarette smoking, of course, has very adverse medical consequences. But also the use of cigarettes by adolescents increases the risk to addiction to nicotine on the one hand, but also there is increasing evidence that it may be priming them for the rewarding effects of other drugs of abuse, including the illicit substances. So that decline in cigarette smoking is likely to have downstream consequences, both in medical health as well as substance use disorders. And in fact, cigarette smoking is at its lowest since its the inception of the survey in 1975. And we're seeing actually extremely remarkable, the dramatic decreases in the prevalence rates of daily smoking as well as past month smoking that have gone down for daily smoking more than 60% over a 15-year period, which highlights the importance of prevention messages and prevention interventions as effective. On the other hand, we cannot be complacent because the rates are still very high despite these dramatic decreases. And we're also seeing the emergence of use of tobacco products, other tobacco products. For example, smokeless tobacco is actually among the 12th graders on the past month is 8.2%, which is actually quite high. And there are other tobacco products like cigars that are being used by young people, highlighting the importance of prevention strategies to go after these products. Good news also comes on the alcohol indicators, which also show they are at the lowest since 1996. And for daily alcohol drinking, that is 46% lower than they were in 1996. And for binge drinking, which is also very problematic, it's 30% lower. And again, these exemplify the concept that prevention interventions work and can have a big impact. On the other hand, on the negative side of things are on the arena of marijuana. Over the past 5 years, we have seen trending towards increases on marijuana utilization, particularly among 10th and 12th graders. This is, of the indicators, the one that actually highlighted in my brain as one that is tells us that we cannot become complacent about it, is that we have the highest rates on everyday marijuana smoking among 12th graders since 1981. 6.6% of 12th graders are smoking marijuana daily regularly. And considering the adverse effects of marijuana on memory and learning, that of course we can predict what the consequences are going in terms of educational achievement. The other issue that is problematic, and it's the first time we're actually surveying, is the emergence, which caught the attention in 2008 in the European countries, of synthetic cannabinoids, which are mixed with plants in order to make believe that these are legal highs or herbal highs. Well, they are not herbal high, they are chemical highs, they are cannabinoids. And the survey for the first time evaluated it, and to my surprise, it's extremely high. Among 12th graders, past year use of these synthetic cannabinoids is 11.3%. That is 1 in 9 teenagers, 12th graders, have tried these synthetic cannabinoids in the past year. So highlighting the need to actually do interventions to not just go after in terms of the adverse effects of marijuana such, but the synthetic cannabinoids. Bad news also is that indicators of perception of risk, which continue to go down. Less kids view smoking marijuana regularly as having any harmful effects. This actually is not a good indicator, because throughout the inception of the monitoring the future, we have learned to recognize that the perception of risk predicts whether kids are going to be smoking marijuana or not. So either we do an intervention to change that, or we can predict that the use of marijuana is going to increase. And finally, the other indicator that is we are paying a lot of attention to is the abuse of psychotherapeutics, which we have come to recognize in the past 10 years of the survey have become increasingly prevalent among teenagers, and it has shifted a pattern towards favoring this type of drug for abuse because of the misperception that they are safer than illicit substance, and maintaining very high levels of abuse of these types of drugs. 8.2% of 12th graders admit to the use of Vicodin, which is a pain medication containing opiates, in the past year. 8.3% admit to the use of amphetamines, which is a stimulant medication regularly used for the treatment of ADHD that is being diverted, not just to get high, but actually to improve cognitive performance. So we have been faced and continue to be faced with very high levels of the abuse of psychotherapeutic. We have seen some declines in some, but very, very steady high levels. So as a strategy, what NIDA is doing is relaunching an updated version of its website for on-prescription targeted towards teenagers to provide information, PRX, to actually expand the knowledge about what we know on the adverse effects of psychotherapeutics. And with that, I want to now welcome my colleague, Dr. Howard Koch, who's the Assistant Director for the Health Services. Howard.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nolkoff, and I appreciate so much being part of this critical press conference. And first, I want to thank you for your passion and leadership in this important area for so long. We love spontaneity. Monitoring the future is truly a time-honored public health resource, and one that I've respected for decades as a physician, researcher, professor, former state health commissioner, and now assistant secretary. So Dr. Johnson, congratulations. It's great to meet you finally and to thank you for your decades of contributions to the country. And of course, it's also great to be here with my wonderful colleague, Director Gil Kerlikowske, who you'll be hearing from in just a second. And I want to extend my thanks to my colleagues from Health and Human Services, Sarah Wattenberg, Kirby Bumpus, and Jenny Rosenberg, who have helped so tremendously with today's presentation. I'm going to speak specifically to the results related to tobacco and alcohol and put these data into context. And let me start with tobacco, the leading preventable cause of death and suffering worldwide. We know that half of all lifetime smokers die prematurely from their dependence. So as a nation, our goal for kids in the next generation is to have them live tobacco-free. Yet, despite the data you are hearing today, every day in the United States, more than 3,800 young people under age 18 smoke their first cigarette. More than 1,000 youth under age 18 become daily cigarette smokers. And we also know that more than 80% of adult smokers begin smoking before age 18. So the actual rate of decline being reported today is relatively small compared to the sharp declines we witnessed in the late 90s, and we have much more work to do. We know what works for youth and tobacco. We know that policies that are effective include 100% smoke-free policies in public places, higher cigarette prices, use of media and counter-advertising, access to cessation services and treatments, and very importantly, well-funded state-based tobacco control programs. So we need to accelerate, not slow, the declines in youth cigarette use. What is complicating this picture even further is the growing public health concern about the use of other tobacco products by youth, particularly hookah, water pipes, and small cigars. And the data being presented today suggests that a considerable amount of experimental use of hookahs and more than a quarter of 12th graders who are boys are using small cigars. We need to stress today that these products are not safe alternatives to cigarettes, and in fact, collectively, they represent yet another gateway to addiction. So we must scale up our tobacco control efforts to address this growing portfolio of challenges. And one way we can do that is to do that through robust FDA regulatory action. I want to remind this audience that in 2009, the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act was signed by the president, provides the FDA with the authority to regulate cigarettes, roll your own tobacco, and smokeless tobacco. And so the rule, among other things, prohibits sale of cigarettes and smokeless tobacco to kids younger than 18, prohibits the sale of cigarette packs with fewer than 20 cigarettes, prohibits distribution of free samples of cigarettes, and prohibits tobacco brand name sponsorship of any athletic, musical, or other social or cultural event. And very importantly for this presentation, the law also permits the FDA to issue regulation to extend its jurisdiction over other tobacco products, a process called deeming. In the spring of this year, 2011, the FDA announced their intention to exercise this authority by issuing a regulation to extend its jurisdiction over other tobacco products, including little cigars, pipe tobacco, hookah water pipes, dissolvables, and e-cigarettes. So we look forward to more progress in that area. Turning to underage drinking, we know this is a leading contributor to death caused by injuries. The data now show that some 5,000 people under the age of 21 die each year from alcohol-related injuries as a result of underage drinking. It also contributes to terrible outcomes such as violence and sexual assault, among other things. And we also understand that underage drinking can have lifelong effects on the developing brain, which does not mature until a person reaches his or her mid to late 20s. So even though there has been progress in alcohol use that Dr. Volkoff has mentioned, alcohol remains the drug of choice for the nation's youth, and these rates remain unacceptably high. Nearly two-thirds of 12th graders, just over one-quarter of 8th graders illegally drink alcohol. And with respect to binge drinking, a critical public health challenge, some 21.6% of 12th graders still binge drink, defined as four drinks on one occasion by women and five drinks or more in men. I am very, very grateful to many community leaders, some of whom are in the audience today, who have dedicated their lives to work with vulnerable youth and government leaders and others to increase awareness about the problem of underage drinking. And those groups and others have helped promote policies to address minors' possession of alcohol, underage drinking and driving, the practices of alcohol suppliers, and other strategies. Because of their work, we are seeing some progress, and we're seeing prevention working to some degree, but we need to do more. As I close, I want to stress that the National Institute for Alcohol and Alcohol Abuse just released a very important short screening instrument for healthcare providers to help detect underage drinking among kids and help them get the treatment they need and deserve. And for adults, there have been and will continue to be reimbursable evidence-based screening and referral practices that can provide important opportunities for early detection, intervention, and treatment. So in summary, we are heartened by some of the results that we are sharing today, but there is much more work to do. We must accelerate all our efforts to protect our kids from harm from tobacco and alcohol in the future. And with that, it is my great honor to introduce and turn the program over to my colleague, Director Gil Kerlikowske. Mr. Kerlikowske is the director of the White House Office of the National Drug Control Policy.
Thank you. So I'm not a doctor. I'm the only one up here that actually is not a doctor. But I'm very honored to be here with Dr. Volkoff, who's been a good friend and a good colleague on these issues for me in the 2.5 years that I've been here, and certainly to my friend and colleague, Dr. Howard Koh, who has shown such leadership in this particular area. And then, as many people have been talking about Dr. Lloyd Johnson and his many decades, I know after a while I hear that too, and many, many decades of effort in this. This is an important survey. I think from our standpoint, from the standpoint of the White House, I think the information that's provided is so critical because it really keeps us connected with the future of this country, and the future of this country is certainly in our teenagers, those kids that we want to see highly educated and want to see working and want to see performing well to all of their potential. And that's why every year when this information comes out, it is of great value and great assistance to policymakers. You know, the perspective is that it's not all bad news oftentimes in this area, and that is that over 30 years, we've actually seen historic decreases and improvements in reducing drug use. And despite the increases in drug use over the past several years, over the long term, the rates of drug use among youth today are lower than they were at that time, those decades ago. But we can do a lot more. Well, the president has already noted that we have changed attitudes in this country regarding the rates of smoking. Many of those things were highlighted by Dr. Koh and Dr. Volkoff. And we've changed perceptions in the way, again, in partnership with a lot of other people, the way we look at drunk driving or alcohol-impaired driving in this country. We can do the same thing when it comes to drug use. Well, it's no surprise to the people in this room that these consequences have substantial impact on the future of this country. It impairs the ability of many of our citizens to reach their full potential. Drug problems hit young people particularly hard, and they are at a vulnerable stage of their development. They deserve our support, and they deserve our protection. Monitoring the future gives us that kind of information as policymakers. The good news is that today's results show that, again, we're not really powerless against teen drug use. Dr. Volkoff talked about smoking and drinking now at historic lows, and although we have all mentioned that more work has to be done, that these efforts have to be accelerated, that it is too high, it shows that when we put our shoulder to the wheel, we actually can make a difference, not just as government, but also a government in partnership with the private sector and partnership with communities. And the progress doesn't happen overnight. You don't turn this around overnight. And you know it doesn't happen in a vacuum. Over the past several decades, parents, the private sector, public health institutions, approaching it from a public education standpoint, they have mounted this sustained, comprehensive, and very balanced efforts to protect teens from alcohol and cigarettes. And Dr. Koh mentioned a number of the specific steps that have been taken. But I have some very real concerns that came out in this, and that's the use of marijuana. It's not changed. It didn't increase statistically in a significant way from last year, but it is up significantly from the past several years. And to make matters worse, as has been mentioned, young people's perception of harm regarding marijuana use is declining. For the first time, this reveals some very surprising information regarding synthetics. And we have read and heard and talked about synthetics anecdotally. Thanks to the work of Dr. Johnson in this survey, we actually have the information that shows 1 in 9 12th graders in America have used synthetic marijuana in the last year. Spice and K2, we've heard all the different terms for this, now rank as the second most frequently used illegal drug among high school seniors, second only to marijuana. Well, these drugs are dangerous, and you can see from calls to poison control centers, and you can certainly see from the data about visits to emergency departments that these things can cause serious harm. Poison control center information received daily calls about this, and if you look at those increases on the charts, you can really tell that this has entered the American vocabulary, but not to the level that it should, and I want to mention that in just a minute. A few months ago, DEA used its emergency scheduling authority to ban the sale of the chemicals used to manufacture K2 and Spice. We have convened several working groups at the federal level, working with our colleagues on Capitol Hill to also, we could not be more proud that the House of Representatives, I believe last week, passed legislation to ban this. It will now be in front of the Senate, and I think there is strong support to get these things off the market. And many states, I believe 38 states, have taken action already because the states can move quickly on these kinds of issues. And I think when I look at a long career and a long history in law enforcement, and I see at times when we were behind on these issues, it took us a long time to catch up. Particularly with synthetics right now, the synthetic marijuana, I think both the federal government, the state government, but also health and education groups are moving much more rapidly. And that's what it takes in this age in which the information is spread so instantaneously through the internet. Well, let me show you what it looks like. This is was purchased recently by the Drug Enforcement Administration. It's about $13. Inside, it would be a packet, no larger than this. It's been sprinkled on tobacco and then used or smoked by young people. And of course, the result is what happens when it comes to either calls to poison control centers or visits to the emergency department. You, parents, and that's who we're speaking to right now, really, they're the most powerful voice. Too often, I think people say, gee, teenagers don't listen to parents. The research is very clear. Actually, teenagers do listen to their parents. This type of problem isn't really in that discussion that parents often have. They talk about the problem involving marijuana with their young people, with their kids, these caregivers. They talk about the problem involving alcohol, but this really hasn't been on their radar screen. And with your help today and discussing it today, we'll make sure that this is on their radar screen so that they can have that important conversation. Using illegal drugs isn't a normal part of everyday life in this country, and too often, whether it's through popular media or other discussions, we have this idea that normalizing drug use, this is just a part of American life, or it's a rite of passage among young people. Actually, it's not. And I've seen young people wearing t-shirts that talk about 77%, meaning they're the 77% that don't use any drugs. So whenever you listen to some of the people say, well, you know, everyone does it, quite frankly, in this country, everyone doesn't do it, whether they're younger or whether they're older. We have to give kids the right message. Well, it's no surprise we have an election coming up next year. There's going to be millions of dollars spent by political operatives to deliver messages that seep into the consciousness of young people, whether it's on legalizing marijuana or other areas. And these campaigns are grounded purely in political advocacy. They're not grounded in science. They're not grounded in research. They're grounded in politics. And instead of a concern for public health, because these really are dangerous, as the data shows us, that is absolutely the wrong message to be giving to young people. And the research is already beginning to become clear that medical states that have passed medical marijuana laws may be linked to higher overall use and abuse of drugs in states that don't have medical marijuana laws. And this comes at a time when parents are unbelievably heightened about the awareness of drug abuse. According to the University of Michigan C.S. Mott Children's Hospital survey released in August, parents consider drug use as the top concern. And African-American and Hispanic parents consider youth drug use as their top worry for their young people. Well, parents are facing enough challenges right now in this country, trying to raise healthy and smart kids who are going to be great achievers. We have to be clear about our messages. While smoked marijuana is not an FDA-approved medicine, the National Institutes of Health have long documented the harms of marijuana use. Science shows it can be addictive, and research shows that it impairs driving. And the studies relating it to the degradation of academic performance are also clear. We're going to continue to examine the effect of marijuana advocacy campaigns that they have on drug use, but in the meantime, making parents more aware of these issues and making sure that they have the right tools that are available to them to have that important discussion with their young people is critical. We remain concerned, and we've talked last year and the year before, at least I did, on these prescription drug abuse problems, and that is something that's very high of concern among my colleagues here and many others in the federal government. But we are making some progress on that. We couldn't be more proud of the Drug Enforcement Administration and their coordination of drug take-back days, because these are drugs that are coming right out of the medicine cabinet, and that's where they need to be stopped. And the surveys show that young people that do abuse prescription drugs, about 70% of them get them from a friend or a relative. And so the support of drug take-back legislation, using all of the other tools that are in the president's outline released in April with Dr. Koh and Dr. Volkoff on prescription drug abuse, is actually going to show some real progress. And I'm very optimistic in that. So we've made headway in a lot of areas. We have a lot more work to do that's been echoed by all of my colleagues. But the fact that we have this data and we have this information is particularly helpful and important. And with that, I have a great honor of introducing the principal investigator for Monitoring the Future, Dr. Lloyd Johnson. And I won't talk about how many years, Dr. Johnson.
Thank you, and good morning. Appreciate you all coming this morning. I see many familiar faces of leadership in the field, folks who've come a number of years to see what we've got to say, and I appreciate that we have the audience. It's a pleasure to join Assistant Secretary Koh, Director Kurlikowski, and NIDA Director Volkoff in presenting the results of this, the 37th survey in the Monitoring the Future series. As in most years, we surveyed about 47,000 students. They are in three grades, 8, 10, and 12, and they are representative samples of the students in each of those grades in the coterminous United States. We continue to study what I'd call an ever-expanding list of both licit and illicit substances used by American adolescents. Among those added to the study this year are synthetic marijuana, energy drinks, snus, which is a new form of smokeless tobacco, and other forms of tobacco. This actually has become a bit of a problem for the study because there's been such a growth in substances that American young people know about and abuse, that we're actually running out of questionnaire space to deal with all of them. But that's a problem we'll have to solve. There's one that you may want to ask about, and that's called bath salts, a new, fairly new substance on the scene. Unfortunately, we didn't include it in this year's survey. It will be in next year's, which starts in just a couple of months. So we hope to be able to report on that rather dangerous substance soon. But the main story this year actually isn't the new drugs so much as three of the long-term leading substances of abuse, as you've heard, tobacco, alcohol, and marijuana. Cigarette smoking among young people peaked about 96, 97. There was a sharp decline thereafter for 5 or 6 years, and then a decelerating decline. And in fact, we were worried last year, as you may recall, that the decline in smoking among teens had actually ended and possibly begun to reverse. But I'm happy to say that this year we've actually observed a continuing decline in all three grades, one that is statistically significant. And if I average across the three grades, we've gone from 13% indicating smoking in the past month down to 12. And with these size samples, that's a very statistically significant change. And it brings their smoking rates in all three grades to historic lows within the life of the study. So I think that's a very important development, and I can't even begin to tell you how many premature deaths have been prevented by this substantial decline in smoking, and how many serious diseases like lung cancer and heart disease have been prevented. So I think it's a very, very important development, both that there has been this large decline and that it's still continuing, because we were fearful that it may not. Still, we have on the order of 19% of our high school seniors indicating in the past month they've smoked cigarettes to some degree. And that, as Dr. Koh suggests, is still not an acceptable level for a behavior that we know has the personal and social costs of cigarette smoking. So there's still much to be done. It's also a good thing, I think, that perceived risk of smoking resumed its longer-term rise this year, and that usually is indicative of future changes to come. The alcohol news is also very encouraging. There's been a long-term decline, but because it's been gradual, I think it really hasn't been widely recognized in alcohol consumption by adolescents. It actually goes back to the early 80s. And there's been a fairly steady decline since then, with one major exception, and that was in the early 90s, first half of the 90s, when illicit drug use went up, so did alcohol. But before that and after that, we've seen a continuing decline in alcohol use, gradual one, but an important one, of considerable magnitude. So, for example, binge drinking among 12th graders is down from 41% in the class of 1981, 30 years ago, to 22% in the class of 2011. Nearly a one-half drop in a very powerful enculturated behavior that leads to a lot of death and destruction for kids and other people too. But with it, of course, has drunk driving has also gone down dramatically in these age groups. So today, alcohol is at a historic low in the life of the study in all three grades, again. The proportion using alcohol in the past 30 days among 8th graders is 13%, among 10th graders 27%, and among 12th graders 40%. So the majority of even 12th graders are not actively drinking, which I think is a good thing and good for them to know, because sometimes the kids who are doing the deviant things are the ones that are overestimated in the population because somehow they're more visible. Another thing to mention with alcohol is that availability or perceived availability has been in decline since the late 90s, and especially among the younger teens. So I think a number of things that states are doing to reduce access have helped to contribute to the progress that we've seen. Now, the third drug is marijuana, and on the other hand, this is not a good news story. It's been moving in the wrong direction. Gradually so for 4 years, after a decade of fairly constant decline in use. The annual prevalence in the three grades combined has grown gradually. In 2007, it was 21.4%. In 2010, it was 24.5%. In 2011, it was 25%. So the increase this year was not of such a magnitude that it was statistically significant. But my interpretation of looking at the charts is that the increase at least continues in the upper grades And I won't be at all surprised to see it continue in eighth grade as well, although it didn't this year. Probably the most important part of this story is the daily use of marijuana is rising, which probably has the greatest consequence for the kids. It's up significantly in the past 2 years in all three grades. It went up significantly last year in all three grades, and this year up some more in all three, but not significantly. So that today, we have 6.6% of our high school seniors say that in the past 2 weeks, in the past 30 days, they've used marijuana on 20 or more occasions. Pretty heavy rate of use. We call it daily or near daily use. And that's one in every 15 high school seniors. If you're looking out at a classroom of 30 kids, on average, two of them are current pot smokers on a daily basis. That's the highest it's been since 1981. Perceived risk for marijuana is down sharply in the last few years, as Dr. Volko mentioned. And I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing this rise in use. And one can speculate as to why that's happening. As often is the case, when perceived risk goes down, peer norms against use also weaken. And we've seen that in the last 3 to 4 years. One of the developments that began in the mid-90s was the expanding use, or really misuse, of prescription-type drugs, psychoactive drugs, used outside of medical regimen. These include the narcotics, sedatives, tranquilizers, and amphetamines. These drugs kept rising after many of the illegal drugs in the late 90s and beginning of 2000s turned around. And so as a result, during this past decade, they really became a more important part of America's drug problem. A substantial proportion of kids were using these drugs without doctor's orders. While it's still a serious problem, I'm glad to report that this unwelcome development seems to have leveled off. About 15% of 12th graders today indicate that in the past year they've used one of these medicinal drugs outside of medical supervision. And that's about where it was in the last couple of years. So that's stabilized. Amphetamine use fell some in the early 2000s, and slowly in the lower grades since. Sedative and tranquilizer use are both gradually reducing, but they certainly have reached a peak. And narcotic drugs, after holding level at 9.2% for several years, are down some. They went down to 8.7% last year and held there this year. So it looks at least like the rise in the use of other narcotics is not continuing. And I think that's a very important part of the equation. Prevalence among 12th graders for most of the 2000s declined some to 8.7%, as I mentioned. But these are still disturbingly high levels of use of these drugs, in particular the narcotic drugs, with their particular addiction potential. But at least these problems have leveled off. But one of the things I've learned is there's always something new coming around the corner. And synthetic marijuana is a marvelous example, as you've heard. it was added to the survey just in 2011. K2, spice, herbal incense, whatever you want to call it. Mr. Kirilikowski has shown you what some of it looks like. Until very recently, it was sold legally in head shops and gas stations and various other, all nine as well, various other outlets. And it's meant to mimic the effects of marijuana because it's using cannabinoids that are slightly altered formulation from actual delta-9 THC. That way they avoided the DEA prohibition on the sale of these drugs. But the DEA did schedule them in February 2011, and we see a prevalence rate among the 12th graders, 11.4%, pretty high number. But the change in the rules occurred in February, and the kids were answering about the previous 12 months. So I think that these numbers reflect more what was going on before the change in the law than after. But our next survey next year should tell us how effective this has been to schedule these drugs. We have looked some at what kinds of kids are using these. We find them to be heavily involved in other drug use. 94% have reported using marijuana in the year. Over 30% reported using marijuana daily in the year. And roughly 60% of them have used other illicit drugs than marijuana. So they're quite a drug experienced group. Excuse me, probably looking around for a cheaper alternative to get a marijuana high. Now, a number of drugs showed some decline this year in addition to alcohol and tobacco. Inhalants, cocaine powder and crack, which are quite low levels. Vicodin, it's a narcotic analgesic, but it's still at 8.1% in 12th grade, so it's still a widely used drug. Adderall, an amphetamine used for the treatment of ADHD. For the three grades combined, it went down from 4.5 to 4.1%, which is significant. Sedatives, tranquilizers, cough and cold medicines, all of these have shown some decline this year. When I say cough and cold medicines, of course, I'm talking about their use for getting high, not for their use for coughs and colds. When kids want to get high with them, they take excessive doses of drugs like Robitussin that contain dextromethorphan. A number of other drugs held steady, including the proportion of kids who used any drug other than marijuana. That was flat. LSD, which is very low levels, but held steady, and other hallucinogens. Salvia, a drug in the mint family, fairly recent on the scene. It's not a scheduled drug. It's used for its short-acting dissociative effects, hallucinogen if you want, and its use is not expanding, but we still do see 2% of 8th graders, 4% of 10th graders, and 6% of 12th graders who say in the past year they've used salvia. Heroin, which is a very important drug, is below 1%, fortunately, in all grades. Other narcotics than heroin, taken as a class, as I said, the level has been level. OxyContin also has been level. Hasn't changed very much in the years that we've been measuring it. Amphetamines remained level. They declined considerably earlier in the decade of the 2000s. Ritalin is level after declining. Crystal meth, a drug of great public concern a little while ago, is at low levels, 1.2% in annual use in 12th grade, and that hasn't changed. And the so-called club drugs, GHB, ketamine, rohypnol, all of those are at low levels and holding. And anabolic steroids, which we don't hear much about anymore, we did for quite a while when they were getting kicked around politically, are at quite low rates, half of what they were in 2002. They haven't changed much, but they're around 1% at each of the grade levels. So to summarize, cigarettes and alcohol use are declining and are at historically low levels. A number of illicit drugs are also declining gradually, including cocaine and Vicodin and sedatives and tranquilizers. The misuse of prescription drugs remains high overall, but level, and some of them are actually showing some decline. And marijuana use is increasing, with daily use at the highest level we've seen in 30 years among the 12th graders. Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to mention one thing. Dr. Volkoff mentioned the new teen website called PeerX, that's RX at the end, for teens, interactive videos, and a lot of information, and it's all in your press kit. Okay, let's open up for questions. We're running a little bit late, but we will be able to take a few questions. And please identify yourself.
Donna Linewand Leje with USA Today.
Donna Linewand Leje with USA Today. Several administrations now have tried aggressive campaigns to curb marijuana use that involved advertising and websites and all kinds of other things. And clearly they haven't gained traction. Anyone have an explanation as to why, and have you thought of any other alternative approaches?
I think a couple things come to mind, Donna. One is that we haven't done as good a job giving parents the tools that they need to have that discussion about marijuana. Just recently, I think a number of efforts have come forward to give parents a better handle on, especially if they were past marijuana users themselves at a younger age, that they would feel comfortable being able to talk about it. And it's a good opportunity to mention the partnership at drugfree.org right here for the work that they do in getting getting these tools in the hands of young people. I also think that we face a very difficult message as adults when we tell, when we see marijuana being advertised as medicine, when it has not been through the FDA process, when we say it's being given to patients by caregivers, and out of dispensaries, and of course we know from now volumes of research that that the people that are utilizing it through those medical marijuana gateways are not people that are chronically or critically ill. And so I think we do a huge disservice to young people as adults who really are trusted messengers by giving them that message, which is false.
More questions? All right, these folks will stay around a little bit if you want to ask a one-on-one question, and you can always come and talk to me to arrange further interviews. Thank you so much, everybody, for coming.